Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Kevin Moore Show. I'm Kevin Moore, and it is a pleasure to be spending the next hour with you. Our opening musical selection was Promises, Promises, a wonderful song from the great composer, Burt Bacharach. And that's what I have for all of you today, the promise that this next hour will be informative, interesting, provocative, and maybe even a little exciting. A promise that our discussions will give you something to think about today and hopefully something to talk about tomorrow. Or what I'd like to think of as a civilized hour of culture and conversation. Well, as I like to do to begin each of our shows, I'd like to read or share a recent poignant story or an especially interesting essay or some philosophical quotes or thoughts or sometimes even a little poetry that touches or speaks to us all. And given the fact that we're in the midst of our Christmas season here, and I just love doing my Christmas shows, of course, I'd like to read a little commentary written by Pam Lanham from the Hinsdale Doings, entitled Remember Christmas Past. And Pam writes, Christmas is a time filled with magic and wonder. We seem to know that instinctively as children and forget it as we grow older. Maybe children experience the sheer joy of Christmas more effortlessly than adults because they're experiencing so many delights of the season for the first time. I think if we adults spent less time worrying about the Christmas to come and more time remembering Christmas's past, we too would take more delight in Christmas present. I think we need to remember what holiday experiences were like the very first time we experienced them. Try to remember the first time you were old enough to really understand who Santa Claus is and how excited you were to find the presents he left you under the tree and in your stocking. Try to remember the first time you watched Miracle on 34th Street, when you couldn't imagine how Mr. Gailey would prove Kris Kringle was the one and only Santa Claus. Or the first time you watched A Christmas Story and how it made you laugh so hard your sides hurt. Try to remember the first time your parents took you downtown to see the lights on Michigan Avenue and the giant tree at Marshall Fields and eating lunch in the Walnut Room. Try to remember the first time you held a candle and sang Silent Night at Christmas Eve Mass or service. Try to remember the first December 25th you jumped up from your bed and looked out the window to find it was in fact a white Christmas. Or for the first time you heard Bing Crosby sing his wonderful rendition of that song. Try to remember the first time you gave a child you love a Christmas gift and how much joy it brought to watch her open it, even if she was more excited by the box than what was inside. Try to remember the first time you saw The Nutcracker or A Christmas Carol and how you left the performance filled with the Christmas spirit. Someone told me recently that some people lose a bit of their Christmas spirit as they get older because they've been through so many Christmases that it's hard to get excited about them anymore. I'm going to try to prevent that from happening by taking time each year to remember the first times I experienced the many wonders of Christmas and trying to carry those feelings with me. Little essay by Pam Lanham, Remember Christmas Past. Try to remember the first time you gave a child you love a Christmas gift and how much joy it brought to watch her open it, even if she was more excited by the box than what was inside. Isn't that true? Well, you know, it's kind of hard, I guess, living in the Chicagoland area to get into the Christmas spirit when the weather's been so mild. You know, we need cold weather, we need a little snow, we need a little sleet. Maybe this weekend, I don't know. And maybe not. So we're running out of time. We got to get some cold weather. But isn't this what happened last year? We had mild weather up to Christmas, then we got tattooed afterwards. But who knows? Hopefully that's the way it'll be. You know, December is an interesting month. It's like National Holiday Month. It's busy enough with Christmas, Hanukkah, and Kwanzaa, but there are other things we celebrate. Each month has their certain celebrations. December is Cooked Grasshoppers Month and Learn a Foreign Language Month. Why in December? You're too busy in December to learn a foreign language. December is also National Stress-Free Family Holiday Month. Good luck. National Tie Month, of course, Christmas ties. And national, needless to say, December is National Fruitcake Month. It's also It's Safe Toys and Gifts Month. Drunk and Drugged Driving Prevention Month, and Identity Theft Prevention and Awareness Month. Interesting. And, of course, one of my favorites, December is National Eggnog Month. God, I love eggnog. Just terrific. One of my favorites. Little story from Michael Sneed, which is kind of interesting. The columnist for the Chicago Sun-Times. She tells a story she passed on from someone that gave it to her. It's called A Christmas Story. I once had a boss who felt a good story was worth repeating. I'm told this little yarn, which is a true story about a pal of mine, and one I've printed in the past, has wound up on more than one refrigerator door and has generated a lovely response over the years. So, here is the tale I've entitled, Sam I Am. This is the Christmas story about a dad named Steve, who has a son named Sam, who learned the truth about Santa Claus on Christmas Eve. But like a good father, Steve worried about how his son was handling this turn in his life. So Steve penned a note to Sam from Santa and left it under the tree. And hopefully I can get through this without tearing up a little bit. It reads, Dear Sam, your dad stayed up last night to tell me that you now know as much about me as I do about you. Well, good. I'm glad you asked. And don't worry, no child ever really leaves me. Ask your mom. Ask your dad. They know I don't live in the North Pole, too cold. They know I don't ride in a sleigh, too dangerous. Still, they love me, and so will you even 50 years from now. Oh, and what do you think happened last night just as you were asking about me? Why, a baby was born out in Kalispell, Montana. That's right. Just as you were putting aside your belief, a brand new child was born who can put it to good use. So long as that keeps happening, Sam, I'll never be out of a job. Sam, I want to wish you a wonderful life. And if you don't mind, I will continue to drop by on future Christmases just to make sure you're okay. Love, Santa. P.S. Remember, you don't have to believe in me to know I'm there. Very touching little story. I think it's something that touches us all because it's just beautiful. And, you know, we all go through that with the kids, and then time marches on. Great things happening at Swirls Cupcakes, of course, our favorite cupcake of choice on the Kevin Moore Show. Swirls for the holidays, gingerbread, chocolate, peppermint, cheesecake, and eggnog. Gluten-free, vegan gluten-free, or heavy gluten. As I like to say, of course, Pam Rose. In fact, Pam Rose is going to be our guest on our show, I think, next week. And when she always comes into the studio, she always brings a whole bunch of cupcakes for everybody. So I know that my studio producer, Josh, and George, and everybody at the station is going to enjoy that. Cupcakes make people happy. Of course, Swirls Cupcakes at 705 West Belden, right around the corner from Children's Memorial Hospital. For information, 773-404-2253. Give Pam a call, and at Christmas time, receive a free cupcake and Swirls. That's terrific. And so get them ordered early so you have them for the holidays, because it's always a fun thing to add to the festivities. You know, I have to share this with you. I thought this was pretty funny. Of course, not that it's funny what happened, maybe, but Alec Baldwin got thrown off a plane the other day because he was tweeting on his mobile phone. They asked him to stop, and he didn't. And, of course, they escorted him off the plane, and then he ended up going on a subsequent flight. But one of the tweets he made in deference to the stewardesses, as he said, it should remain nameless, is where retired Catholic school gym teachers from the 1950s find jobs as flight attendants. Well, I don't know. You know, having been taught by gym teachers in the Catholic school or nuns, you know, sometimes you never know, right? I don't think that's the case, but it was kind of clever the way he put that. A Lille Street Art Center, of course, something different to do for the holidays. Give the gift of creativity this holiday season at the Lille Street Art Center. Choose from Lille Street's huge array of one-of-a-kind ceramics, textiles, jewelry, and more on the newly expanded Artisan Gift Shop. Little Street gift certificates available for classes, workshops, and in the Artisan Gift Shop. During the month of December, Little Street Art Center will become a hub for holiday shopping by offering everything from ceramics and jewelry to handmade toys and crafts. Little Street will also host a series of events, including the popular 36th Annual Holiday Party and the Holiday Open House, to officially kick off the season and highlight the center's beautifully expanded gallery space and transformed Artisan Gift Shop. Person can truly experience everything we offer and also give something with character, craftsmanship, and heart while simultaneously supporting the work of local and nationally known artists, says Little Street CEO Bruce Robbins. Or give the gift of creativity this year by introducing a friend or family member to Little Street's classes, allowing them the opportunity to stretch their personal artistic expression. Of course, Little Street is located at 4401 North Ravenswood. And all different types of disciplines of art, ceramics and metalsmithing and jewelry and painting and drawing and textile arts and printmaking and glassworking and digital arts and photography, fabric, knitting, screen printing, just so many different things. For information, 773-769-4226. So a lot of fun things to do and certainly a lot of creative things, the gift of creativity for the Christmas season. So the Little Street Arts Center, different, unique way of celebrating Christmas. Well, since it's our Christmas shows, I thought we'd play a little Christmas music, one of my favorites from Tony Bennett, his Christmas album entitled Snowfall, one of the quintessential Christmas songs. The Christmas song, Chestnuts Roasting on an Open Fire, of course, written by Mel Torme. We'll be back with The Kevin Moore Show.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire, Jack Frost nipping at your nose, Yuletide carols being sung by a choir, and folks dressed up like Eskimos. Everybody knows a turkey and some mistletoe help to make the season bright. Tiny tots with their eyes all aglow will find it hard to They know that Santa's on his way. He's loaded lots of toys and goodies on his sleigh. And every mother's child is gonna spy to see if reindeer really know how to fly. And so I'm offering this simple phrase to kids from 1 to 92. Although it's been said many times, many ways, Merry Christmas.
One of my favorites, Tony Bennett, from his Christmas album, Snowfall, the Christmas song. I have endeavored in this ghostly little book to raise the ghost of an idea which shall not put my readers out of humor with themselves, with each other, with the season, or with me. May it haunt their houses pleasantly and no one wish to lay it. Signed, their faithful friend and servant, in December of 1843, Charles Dickens. Marley was dead, to begin with. There is no doubt whatever about that. The register of his burial was signed by the clergyman, the clerk, the undertaker, and the chief mourner. Scrooge signed it, and Scrooge's name was good upon change for anything he chose to put his hand to. Old Marley was as dead as a doornail. There is no doubt that Marley was dead. This must be distinctly understood, or nothing wonderful can come of the story I am going to relate. And something wonderful is happening out at the Metropolis Performing Arts Center. Metropolis infuses new magic into the holiday classic A Christmas Carol. A never-before-seen version of A Christmas Carol comes to Metropolis' Performing Arts Center through December 24th. Metropolis has been telling the tale of grumpy old Scrooge who discovers love and joy on Christmas Eve for 10 years. But this year, Metropolis is bringing its audiences an exciting new adaptation of the beloved A Christmas Carol. Resident playwright Scott Waldman has found a new way to bring warmth and the teachings of love into Scrooge's heart and the audiences. Join Scrooge on his unforgettable adventure through time to find what he's been missing from his life. This holiday season, you won't want to miss this magical musical the whole family can treasure. Director Brad Dunn is working with an extraordinarily talented cast, many of whom call the suburbs home. And on the line with us right now is the award-winning playwright, improv comedian, nationally recognized actor, performance poet, teacher, academic counselor, a leader in the West Suburban School District community, resident playwright at the Metropolis Performing Arts Center, and just a very funny man. Now presenting the Charles Dickens classic, A Christmas Carol, at the Metropolis Performing Arts Center, 111 West Campbell, in downtown Arlington Heights, through December 24th, our good pal, Mr. Scott Waldman. Scott, welcome back to the Kevin Moore Show.
Hey, Kevin, it is great to be here. I'm always so excited, and I always love when you introduce it. It makes me sound so much more impressive than I actually am.
I hope people believe that. This is exciting, a Jewish guy doing a Christmas. I like that idea.
You know, it actually, well, I didn't know this, and somebody pointed out to me that there are so many Christmas songs that are actually written by Jewish writers. I wasn't aware until I told someone I was writing The Christmas Carol, and they directed me to a website, and I don't know why that happens or what that phenomenon is all about, but there are a tremendous amount of Christmas songs written by Jewish writers.
They have nothing else to do with Christmas. They're not celebrating.
They're sitting around by themselves writing songs.
Irving Berlin, White Christmas, of course, and Mel Torme, The Christmas Song, Chestnuts Roasting on a Curd. There you have it. I mean, that's
yeah,
true.
That's
very
that's
true.
All you that's need.
This
that's
is exciting. I know you have done such, and we kid around because we're such good friends, but you have done such wonderful things at the Metropolis with our good pal, your partner, Mr. Jim Jarvis, and of course, now this is something a little different. How did you get interested in wanting to do A Christmas Carol, Scott?
This is, well, you know, Metropolis had been talking about doing it, you know, for a while because, you know, they had been doing the same adaptation for, I think, 7 or 8 years, and they were sort of banding about the idea, and they asked me, you know, what would I do or how would I change it if I were to do it. They weren't 100% sold on it, and so I read the novel. And you actually, you know, listening to your intro, you kind of hit upon something that resonated with me, which is, you know, Dickens, in his narration, there's a lot of humor and warmth in his writing, which often doesn't make it into, you know, the adaptation of the play, because it's kind of hard, because he's not a character, you know, so how do you do that? How do you get that sort of humor and that warmth and all the great stuff that Dickens wrought? So I tried to kind of change this script and give it kind of like I put it from Bob Cratchit's perspective, and sort of we go back and we visit with Bob Cratchit and his family from time to time, and he's telling this story, and I signed a lot of Dickens' narration as actual lines and dialogue to the Cratchits. And so, you know, I really strove to, you know, get that humor in there. At least that's how I presented it to the Metropolis in terms of what I wanted to do. And they were kind of intrigued by the idea, so they told me, well, we'll go ahead and take a stab at writing it. And, you know, nothing was certain. And after I wrote it, they were very happy with it. So I was fortunate, and we moved forward from there. So that's kind of how it all fell into place.
Interesting story. Here Dickens starts writing this story that he had an idea for back in November of 1843. 6 weeks later, he has this prepared. It's published December 19th, 1843. Sells out in 5 days. And here we are 160 years later, and it still brings goosebumps when we watch it and listen to it.
Absolutely. I mean, it's just it's such a classic story, and it resonates with everyone because there's so much everyone can relate to in this story. You know, I mean, he really nailed it. You know, like I need to be giving praise to Dickens, but he did. I'm a big fan.
I'm going to read a little something which kind of describes what you're doing about A Christmas Carol. It should be said that this is a scary show in the deepest sense of that word, but also a joyous one. On the one hand, it deals with selfishness, greed, the emotional scars that can come with poverty, and the fears of mortality. On the other hand, it is all about the power of love, the rewards of generosity, of spirit as much as of purse, and redemption. It is full of ghosts, some benign, some terrifying, and it is full of family life in all its guises. It is also full of music. And that's what your show is all about, because it's a great family show. And what it does, you know, 160 years notwithstanding, you are keeping that legacy going. That's quite a responsibility, but it's quite very special, too.
It is, absolutely. I mean, and there was, like, a tremendous pressure and even concern that you wanted to make sure, I wanted to make sure that I was honoring Dickens. And I wasn't really tinkering too much, you know, with his words and his play, but doing everything I can to make what was already there shine even more. And, you know, I have just been privileged to have such great collaborators. You know, Brad Dunn, you talked about directing, but also Mickey York, who he found some existing Christmas carols, and Mickey and I even wrote two original Christmas carols together. This is probably a much more musical adaptation I've seen than many of the others, and there's a wonderful dancing. I mean, it's a really warm show that really, I think, would do Dickens proud.
You know, when you're putting the process, this creative process together, whether it's on this show or any show, but let's use this one as an example. Do you write something, you run it by your bride, do you talk to, you know, Brad about it, do you talk to the collaborators that are involved over at Metropolis about it, do you tweak it here and there, so everybody has a little bit of spice that they put into the pot?
I do. I mean, I try. I probably, you know, when people know that I'm in the middle of writing a play and they see me coming towards them, probably their first inclination is to run, because I'm always like, I have pages in hand, and would you mind taking a look at this and give me your feedback? I mean, it is one of the exciting things, and sometimes one of the challenging things about writing is, you know, at times, it's a solitary endeavor, you know, mm-hmm. as opposed to when I'm acting, I'm in a show, you know, I'm collaborating on a daily, you know, I'm almost always working with somebody on what it is I'm doing, versus when you're writing, you spend a good portion in your head, and then you kind of seek people out for feedback. So I absolutely try and bring as many people as I can into the process. You know, Brad, actually, who's directed several of my shows, sometimes will come to me, and he'll just tell me, you know, this is an idea, I want to do this. And, you know what, I'm so excited to get his input and feedback. A lot of times I just tell him, you know, pretty much whatever he says, go ahead and do that, which I think is unusual for some playwrights at the very least. They kind of like to see what they wrote, their vision be, you know, put up on stage. But I kind of look at it as our vision and get as much feedback as I can.
And I know I complimented you before. It's a collaborative effort, but in the same respect, self-effacing to an extent too, because you go in there with the expectation that everybody pitches in because we're going to create something that hasn't been created before. We've been missing a couple people. You know, Jim Jarvis is the executive director, is out at the Paramount now, and Brad Dunn, of course, who did such a terrific job, is no longer there. But these people come back because they gravitate to this family atmosphere because they want to create such a beautiful show. And from that standpoint, I would imagine there's some playwrights that's kind of a hands-off attitude. Look, this is my idea. I'm going to do this. Leave me alone. You, on the other hand, you know what? You never know where you're going to come up with a good idea.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, very much, I think, you know, the Metropolis, I look at almost as this is my theater. I'm part of the Metropolis family. And I think it's a great place to see a show, and it's a great place to work on a show, because there's just, you know, a family atmosphere. You're all part of the team, and they work really hard, you know, to make sure that everybody doesn't just feel involved, but everybody is involved. And even the people that have, in some aspect of their either their work or their creative life, moved to other places, they always, you know, still come back and work at Metropolis in some capacity. It is such a great place to work.
Well, Kevin Moore presents did Rodgers and Hammerstein, Andrew Lloyd Webber, Irving Berlin, and now we're doing George Gershwin. So I wish you'd come back and see a show there, if you please.
I absolutely will. How's that? It's been a little hot. I have two babies at home, but you know what? I'm going to bring them.
I got babysitters. We'll take care of it.
Perfect.
You wear a lot of different hats, of course, as a playwright, as an actor, as a director, and certainly as a comedian, a stand-up comedian, performance artist, and so forth. And, of course, your successful career, guiding young people in your counseling with school and so forth. That's a lot of hats to be wearing.
Yeah, they are. And one of my classes is actually listening. I took a break. I'm teaching an after-school reading class, so they're all in the other room. They don't want to be here as it's after school and we're working on reading, but I told them I would say hello to all of them. So this is my official shout-out, and I'll get back to work.
Well, they're going to be able to get that on the website, which is KevinMoorePresents.com.
Okay.
That's where they can get it. But, do you prefer one over the other, Scott? Do you like the directing? Do you like the writing?
I enjoy both of them. There's just some things that, in terms of teaching and education, you just can't get anywhere else, but there's also things to be said, in terms of writing when it all works together. I think for me, it'll depend on, what's going well at the time. So if I have a great day teaching and everybody, is reading my script and telling me I need to go back to drawing board, I'm kind of like, wow, I really love teaching. So, and vice versa,
You always have something to fall back on.
Right, absolutely.
You and I and Jarvis are due to get together. We haven't done that in a while. What's next up for our good pal, Scott Waldman?
I am working on a show called 10 Ways to Kill Your Husband, also at the Metropolis. It'll be opening sometime in the spring, and I'm currently in rewrites.
And you're also pursuing the Great American Novel.
That's right. Absolutely.
Work in progress. Scrooge was better than his word. He did it all and infinitely more. And to Tiny Tim, who did not die, he was a second father. He became as good a friend, as good a master, and as good a man as the good old city knew, or any other good old city, town, or borough in the good old world. Some people laughed to see the alteration in him, but he let them laugh. His own heart laughed, and that was quite enough for him. He had no further intercourse with spirits, but lived upon the total abstinence principle ever afterwards, and it was always said of him that he knew how to keep Christmas well, if any man alive possessed the knowledge. May that be truly said of us and all of us. And so, as Tiny Tim observed, join with me, my pal. God bless us.
God bless us, everyone.
Metropolis infuses new magic into the holiday classic A Christmas Carol. A never-before-seen version of A Christmas Carol comes to Metropolis' Performing Arts Center through December 21st. And on the line with us right now is the new adaptation writer of A Christmas Carol at the Metropolis Performing Arts Center, our good pal Scott Waldman. Scott, I'm going to give a phone number and for the Metropolis, 847-577-2121. Always a pleasure, my pal. I will wish you a happy holiday season, and I'm going to insist upon the three of us getting together after the holiday so we can enjoy each other's company a little bit.
Absolutely, and happy holidays to you as well. Thank you so much for having me, Kevin.
Thank you, my pal.
I'll take care.
Scott Waldman, one of the very talented writers in the Chicagoland area, Chicagoland theater community, of course, has done a terrific job at the Metropolis and everything that he is involved in. A very talented writer and also a very talented comedian. He and Jim Jarvis have an act together. But given the opportunity, make sure you stop down and see A Christmas Carol at the Metropolis Performing Arts Center in Arlington Heights. Beautiful, regentrified area down in Arlington Heights, and certainly just a beautiful beautiful area, beautiful place to see A Christmas Carol and enjoy a little Christmas spirit. Certainly a Christmas show that everyone certainly have a lot of fun with. I read this the other day. Three wise women would have asked for directions, arrived on time, helped deliver the baby, cleaned the stable, made a casserole, brought practical gifts, and then there would be peace on earth. Nothing like chatting about A Christmas Carol is one of the great things we all do around Christmas time. And another great movie and play is that we always enjoy around Christmas time is It's a Wonderful Life. American Blues Theater's acclaimed production of It's a Wonderful Life, live at the Biograph, returns to Chicago now through December 31st. American Blues Theater, Chicago's second oldest equity ensemble, continues its 2011-2012 season with the return engagement of the critically acclaimed It's a Wonderful Life, live at the Biograph, directed by Marty Higginbotham in the Victory Gardens Richard Christensen Theater, 2433 North Lincoln, now through December 31st. From the moment the audiences walk through the doors, they are transported back to the golden age of radio to experience the story of George Bailey as never before. It's a Wonderful Life live at the Biograph takes one back to a 1940s radio broadcast of Frank Capra's holiday classic, It's a Wonderful Life, based on the short story by The Greatest Gift by Philip Van Doren Stern, complete with commercial breaks and live Foley sound effects. The original score and a stellar cast of seven bring the entire town of Bedford Falls to life in a holiday production that is the perfect choice for young and old alike. And on the line with us right now is the star of stage and screen, Jefferson Award-winning actor having performed at the Goodman Theater, Northlight, and Circle Theater, nationally recognized director, teacher, mentor, multi-talented entertainer, and director of the classic Christmas story It's a Wonderful Life, performed by the American Blues Theater at the Victory Gardens Richard Christensen Theater, 2433 North Lincoln, through December 31st, our good pal, Marty Higginbotham. Marty, welcome back to the Kevin Moore Show.
Hey, Kevin, thank you so much. It's great to be back.
Always a pleasure. I always love chatting with you about It's a Wonderful Life, as well as the people who come and see it year in, year out.
Yeah, it's an amazing experience, and as the show's grown over the many years, to see folks come back and to also see the new folks who discover it on an annual basis.
You are allowing the audience to relive what they've seen or learned in the past, and for those, like you say, those new audience members that are coming, introduce them to a classic story that's timeless. Started, of course, in Bedford Falls on Christmas Eve in 1946, and here we are so many years later, still enjoying it as freshly and as vigorously and enthusiastically as we always have.
Absolutely.
You know, how do you generate your enthusiasm for this year in, year out? Because, you know, you've done this a few times. You've reacted in it. You've performed in it. You've written it. You've done worn a lot of different hats in the process.
It's you know, and if you would have, you know, 8 or 10 years ago, if you would have said to me, you know, is there any way you would still be involved in 2011? And I would have said, no, I'll have put it down, you know, way before then. I think what keeps me engaged, Kevin, is it's the story. It's just the story that's told. It's George Bailey's story, and it's an honor and a responsibility to share it with a returning and a new audience every year. And I've got an incredible cast. You know, there's usually a little bit of turnover. We've got three new cast members this year, all of whom are absolutely wonderful. I think when you've got a hardworking cast with a group of people, actors, designers, backstage, stage management, who've come together with a commitment to tell this story, you're going to find something new and fresh every year, which we do. And once again this year in the rehearsal process, we found some wonderful things. And infused with that new energy of new cast members. It's been great.
You know, the play, the movie is a life-changing experience, but you know, you just said two things are very, very interesting. It's an honor and a responsibility, and it is, and you take that very seriously. And we as the audience members or those audience members that come back year in, year out, and the new ones that come, very excited to be there because, especially in the theater, the Victory Gardens Theater, the Richard Christensen Theater, it's a very intimate venue, and you feel like you're a part of it, and you look back and you kind of take a step back in time like it's a radio, well, it is a radio broadcast, but you feel like, well, that's how it was, and then you kind of, what do you call it, kind of suspend, a willing suspension of disbelief, I think, right. The romantic poets used to call it.
Right, and that's what we've always tried, and of course there's always a little bit of anachronism, you know, within the experience itself, but we try to allow the audience to come in and just sort of give themselves over to that moment, as you said, and to be a part of it for those 80 to 90 minutes. And as I said before, it is a responsibility because this is an incredible story. And what I tell the cast usually around first preview, just to remind them, is to say that, you know, the most important thing is to go out there every night, tell that story, to enjoy yourselves, of course. But I always remind them that on any given night, you just don't know if there's someone out there in that audience who needs to hear this story. And that's why it's important for them to always be out there giving their best.
You know, Frank Capra's favorite film, Jimmy Stewart's favorite film, is that one of the most difficult things, Marty, you think, that is to try as an actor or performer to keep that freshness, whether it's this show or any show, maybe this show even more so because it's been around so long, to keep that freshness every day when you go on the stage and try to perform in front of a group?
Absolutely, and that's what separates the good actor from the great. It is about bringing yourself to it every time, a new, fresh energy. And it's not about locking down that performance. You know, it's not about deciding this is exactly what this moment is about. Because, you know, any actor will tell you that a big part of the job is listening to that other cast member. And in a radio show, it's even more important, and they're more in tune to that. And if they get something fresh from another cast member, it's gonna freshen and sweeten their response that they have. And you really don't know that the overall tone that the show's going to take on any given night.
You know, the American Blues Theater has had such success over the last few years, certainly with all of the various shows that they've done. I think a little while ago we saw Clifford Odets' show that they put on. Which one was
Waiting
that?
Waiting for Lefty.
Waiting for Lefty. Gosh, that was such a powerful, powerful presentation.
Short little piece. It's
yeah.
Not that long, but boy, it packs a punch.
So. It really does. And again, the theater venue was perfect for it because you felt like you were participatory in the whole union process, being part of it. And, you know, so many, I think we talked to Gwen Whiteside about it, a very talented young woman. But how do you get so many people that are full of such talent in one spot to be able to produce and put something together like that? And it goes on and on. It's just remarkable.
Isn't that a small miracle?
It really is.
I tell you what, and speaking of Richard Christensen, the namesake of this theater,
great guy.
It's a tribute to this city, and it's a tribute to every talented theater person that decides to come to this town and make their home here, whether for a few years or the rest of their lives. There's a very special community here in the city of Chicago that's not only talented, but committed to the work and each other and to creating lives for themselves. And it's magic. It's something that American Blues is always considered very fortunate to get the people that we do to work with.
And it must be something in their heart because they don't do it for the money.
No. Well, you know, on average, you know, a not-for-profit theater, a certain percentage comes from ticket sales. The rest is fundraised and through donations and foundations.
Well, you wear a lot of different hats yourself. You know, you've acted, you've written, you've directed, and so forth. And certainly, you're in the business world also. Which one do you miss being on the stage, getting on the stage a little bit?
You know what? I am starting to miss it just a little bit. It's been about, now, I'm going to embarrass myself, I'm going to have to count back. What has it been? It's been about 4 or 5 years since I've been on stage now. But I've, you know, we all make choices in our lives. I love what it sort of fills my days these days, and I'm sure I'll be back sooner or later. But right now, I'm happy where I am.
Well, you're kind of on the south side of Chicago, though, the far south side.
I'm approximately 620 miles south of Madison right now.
You know, I had a nice conversation with your father-in-law yesterday, fine gentleman, and it's a different style. I told you it was snowing down there. In Alabama, it's snowing? Okay, very good. We don't have it up here. We got to have it somewhere.
And that, by the way, that man you spoke with, my father-in-law, one of the more prominent portrait artists in the country.
Oh, really? Really?
Yeah,
interesting.
Wonderful man. Wonderful.
He says he's pulling for Alabama in the BCS bowl. I can't imagine why.
And I'm an old Auburn Pat Sullivan guy from way back, but we still get along.
Well, you know, it's a great evening in the theater, great family entertainment. And as I wind up, I just want to share this. Of course, I've done this before. As is said in the classic It's a Wonderful Life, you see, George, each man's life touches many other lives. And when he's not around, he leaves an awful hole, doesn't he? This play, it's been said, is like an American version of Dickens's A Christmas Carol. But there are some differences between the two, apart from time and place. In A Christmas Carol, Scrooge is given a chance to change the way he lives his life. In A Wonderful Life, the hero, George Bailey, is given the chance to change the way he looks at life, an adjustment in the way he sees his place in the world. He doesn't need to change the way he acts, just the way he looks at life. George, you've had a wonderful life. At this time of year, when many of us are taking stock of our lives, looking back on the past year, making wishes for the present, and getting ready to make resolutions for the future, we are always drawn to this beautiful story. George wasn't a Superman-type hero. He was, like many of us, a human being trying to live life the best way he knows how. And maybe this little story should serve as a gentle reminder to all of us that we are all capable of making small decisions every day and practicing those awesome random acts of kindness that touch many other lives. And ultimately, in our small actions, change the world in big ways. The American Blues Theater, Chicago's second oldest equity ensemble, continues its 2011-2012 season with a return engagement of the critically acclaimed It's a Wonderful Life, live at the Biograph, directed by Marty Higginbotham in the Victory Gardens Richard Christensen Theater, 2433 North Lincoln Avenue, now through December 31st. On the line with us right now is Marty Higginbotham. Marty, I'm going to give a phone number for the theater, 773-871-3000. You know, it's always a pleasure, something I look forward to. It's an honor and responsibility to have you on the show here to talk about It's a Wonderful Life.
Now I want to know what the responsibility is.
Well, it wouldn't be Christmas without you. That's what it is.
Oh, thanks, Kevin.
You know, always a pleasure, and our best to you and your family, and congratulations on something that's coming up just after the new year, too.
That's great. We get a little one on the way second week of January.
Well, God bless you, and I hope everybody's healthy and happy, and Merry Christmas, my pal.
Thank you so much, Kevin. You too.
Take care, Marty.
All right, bye-bye.
Marty Higginbotham, the director for one of the classic, It's a Wonderful Life at the Biograph, the Victory Gardens Richard Christensen Theater, 2433 North Lincoln, now through December 31st. Always a pleasure chatting with Marty Higginbotham, the director of It's a Wonderful Life. For information, again, 773-871-3000. Let's play a little more Christmas music from Tony Bennett's The Christmas Album, Snowfall, one of my favorites. Have yourself a Merry Little Christmas.
Christmas future is far away. Christmas past is past. Christmas present is here today, bringing joy that will last. Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Let your heart be light. From now on, our troubles will be out of sight. Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Make the Yuletide gay. From now on, our troubles will be far away. Here we are, as in olden days. Faithful friends who are dear to us, gather near to us once more. Through the years we all will be together, if the fates allow. Hang a shining star upon the highest bough, and have yourself a merry little Christmas now.
One of my favorites from Tony Bennett, Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. Theater at the Center presents the Chicago area premiere of the holiday musical comedy Another Night Before Christmas, book and lyrics by Sean Grennan, music by Leah Akimoto. From the Writers of Married Alive and A Dog's Life comes the Chicago air premiere of Another Night Before Christmas through December 18th at the Theater at the Center, 1040 Ridge Road in Munster. Find the true meaning of Christmas in this wonderful holiday musical about a right jolly old elf, a less jolly single woman, and an old wish finally coming true. Another Night Before Christmas is a delight for the whole family. This witty and tuneful holiday favorite, directed by our good pal Bill Pulinski, is sure to win laughs from anyone who's ever lost or found the holiday spirit. Chicagoland favorite Hollis Resnick stars as Carol Elliott, with Don Forsten starring as the guy who just may have a prestigious job at the North Pole. And on the line with us right now is the award-winning television and film actor, having appeared in such hits as Law and Order, The Untouchables, and Rudy. Popular Chicago stage performer who has been seen at Chicago Shakespeare Theater, Court Theater, and the Goodman Theater. Nationally recognized and award-winning playwright and lyricist, and now presenting Another Night Before Christmas at Theater at the Center, 1040 Ridge Road in Munster, Indiana, through December 18th, Mr. Sean Grennan. Sean, welcome to the Kevin Moore Show.
Hi, Kevin. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, it's great to have you, and congratulations on another success with Another Night Before Christmas.
Well, you know, it would be hard to miss with those actors and that director. I mean, those people, they make you seem like a much better writer than you really are.
You know? You know, I've known Bill Pulinski many years. I'll tell you a little story. I bought Bill's house out in the western suburbs many, many years ago.
Oh, really?
Really, yes. And Bill and I have been friends for a long time. And, of course, Hollis Resnick just had such great success at Follies. I don't know if you had the opportunity to see Follies at Chicago Shakespeare, Sondheim's Follies, but it was terrific.
I didn't catch it because I'm living in New York right now. It's a long story, don't ask me. But I did hear a lot about it. I have so many friends back in Chicago, and the Facebook and all of that thing were just lit up about it. It sounds like it was amazing.
Well, it's terrific. And to have her star in your production here, like you say, it's just something made in heaven. And for our listeners, maybe just give us a little story about what Another Night Before Christmas is all about.
Sure. I set out to write a small cast show, a two-person show, with my composer-collaborator, Leah Okamoto. And we thought, you know, sort of a chamber show, and we're just kind of mulling about what a sort of a contemporary take on Christmas. And I know a lot of people find that the holiday season can be a little bit of a downer, you know, if you're alone or
yeah.
You're a little maybe at odds with your family or whatever. It's sort of exacerbated by the fact that everybody around you is smiling and laughing, you know. So I thought, what if this person, a really good person, she's a social worker, she tries hard, she's got a good heart, but she's just got herself into a funk. What if she encountered somebody, you know, along the way who might just be the guy, Santa Claus, you know. So the challenge, of course, was to get them, like, essentially locked in a room together where they had to talk and they had to work all this Christmas stuff out. So I used the device of a faulty alarm system that locked them in like a safe room, you know, and just sort of set them loose. And you know, you have one guy who's might be, I'm not saying, the right jolly old elf, and then this person who's kind of cynical and down on Christmas, and is, maybe her family has always thought it was silly and a commercial thing, and can she, in the course of that time together, find Christmas, find the joy? And that's what the show's pretty much about.
What was Shakespeare's sonnet, "The world is too much with us," and I think sometimes, like you say, during the holidays, reality sets in, and maybe your expectations sometimes are greater than your fulfillment. Of course, Carol, in this particular play, you know, she's had tough times along the way, and here she is. And maybe Santa is more of a psychologist and a therapist and a counselor to her, and she's talking to him in such a way that she's wishing that's the case. And as it turns out, well, you never know how it turns out, right?
Well, you never know, yeah. But you're absolutely right. I mean, he comes at her from every angle to try to get her to, you know, to believe in something. And I mean, he's sort of a therapist, but he also appeals to, he makes food for her. You know, he talks about presents. He talks about the homeless and how good you have it. And, you know, he works on her from every possible angle and essentially just tries to wear her down. And he's you know, Don Forsten, who plays the guy, he's a funny guy just standing still. So you give him a couple of lines and he'll kill you. You know, he's great.
You know, it's a time of year that I find myself, even the most trivial little Christmas book. I have to pick it up and read it, although, you know, sometimes it has some substance and sometimes not. But it just puts you in that Christmas spirit. It's like reading Clement C. Moore's poem, A Night Before Christmas, or rereading The Christmas Carol, or seeing The Christmas Carol, or The Nutcracker, or It's a Wonderful Life, something we all enjoy doing. And here is another show that becomes part of the legacy of Christmas, and it touches you because, you know, you put yourself in Carol's shoes, and we all would rather like sometime maybe to sit on Santa's lap and tell him our problems a little bit, maybe have him help of work it out a little bit.
Exactly, exactly. It is, and we all get a little cynical, and we all get a little down sometimes about the whole thing. And in fact, the character Don plays even says that his name is Clement Moore, and that was my little nod to the poem, the title of the show, because in that poem, you know, Santa breaks in to do his job, and he's caught by the head of the household. And that's really this story, you know. So I'm sort of expanding on that, putting it in a modern context, setting it in Chicago, you know, which is my home. So it's very easy to think of things about Chicago, you know. So
now, did you, of course, you had a little taste of Miracle on 34th Street going here too, right?
A little bit, yeah, a little bit. You know, you sort of rip off those ideas, and then you try to take that idea and expand on it, and maybe contemporize it a little bit, and just. And have fun in a more topical setting. And I think I pulled little bits and pieces from things because we all have sort of like a box of Christmas ideas, you know. And I just wanted to reassemble them in a different way and maybe give it some, you know, little update, little currency for right now.
Well, we all certainly, the audiences are certainly enjoying it, and that's always something fun to see. You have a lot of things going, of course, being a playwright yourself and a lyricist and so forth, and now you have something going in the Heartland Theater Group that you're involved in. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, you know, actually, I have to start driving there tomorrow. There's a theater in Kansas City that I've become very good friends with, affiliated with, called the American Heartland Theater, and they're doing a new show of mine in January that's called Beer for Breakfast. And I'm a writer, but I've been an actor for about 35 years, and this one is about some guys who go, like older guys who go away to a sort of a vacation cabin for a weekend. They're trying to recapture that thing they had in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah. I remember.
Me too. And they're the four of them have been buddies since college, and they're driving there. It's winter, but it's fine. They're just going to try to recapture the magic. And three of them show up, and one of them, you know, they're all in their 50s now. One of them's had a stroke, you know, so he's not quite all there. And one of them divorced. You know, they've had some life happen to them. Mm-hmm. One of them not working. You know, by the way, this is a comedy. But, and instead of the fourth guy showing up, the fourth guy's wife shows up.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, so they're kind of trapped in a room again, just like the couple in Another Night. And the theater there convinced me to take one of the roles as an actor.
Oh, cool.
I've never done that before. I think it's suicide, and I'm asking for it. So, but we start rehearsal on the 16th of December, open in early January, and we'll see if I'm quite mad.
Well, that's quite exciting. Of course, like you said earlier in our conversation here, you your bride is. You're out in New York because your bride is in Wicked, one of the stars of Wicked, which is very exciting. I've seen it four times and like to see it again, actually.
Oh, yeah. She's been doing Wicked for a while. We came out here. She was in Les Mis, the original company of Les Mis. She did the last 3 years of that. And she's done some stuff around the country. And then she was in the Chicago Wicked when it first opened, just for like 6 months. And then she did one of my shows. She did Married Alive, which I wrote for her. And then when she opened the original company, and then Broadway asked her to join Wicked, and she's been doing it for about 5 years now. She's a lot more talented than I am.
Well, we'll see after the Heartland Theater. I mean, that might not be the case. You never know.
It'll still be the case.
Well, you know, we wish a lot of success with that. And, of course, a lot of people, as I said, are still enjoying Another Night Before Christmas, and I thank you for certainly sharing all your talents, whether it's acting-wise or whether it's writing-wise, with all the people in and around Chicago. We miss you here, but we know you got something going there in New York, and you never know where you're going to pop up with some movie or some television show, and that's kind of exciting, too.
Oh, I miss Chicago like crazy, I can't tell you. It's my home. So, you know, I'm born and raised, lived there with, you know, a school, Oak Park High School and Northwestern University. You know, it's we used to can't spend. I was there for about 45 years. You kind of get deep roots, and I miss it. I'm looking forward to. I'm going to see my family this weekend back in Chicago. I'm looking forward to that.
Oh, that's great. Founded in 1991, Theater at the Center is a year-round professional theater at its home, the Center for Visual and Performing Arts, 1040 Ridge Road in Munster. From the writers of Married Alive and A Dog's Life comes the Chicago area premiere of Another Night Before Christmas through December 18th at Theater at the Center. Find the true meaning of Christmas in this wonderful holiday musical about a right jolly old elf, a less jolly single woman, and an old wish finally coming true. Another Night Before Christmas is a delight for the whole family. And on the line with us right now is Mr. Sean Grennan, who wrote Another Night Before Christmas. Always a pleasure to have you on the show. I'm going to give a phone number for the Theater at the Center, Sean, 219-836-3255. And do me a favor, share with me your website, because people can get some information as to when you're going to be performing or appearing in or around the Chicagoland area, or, heck, throughout the United States.
Oh, well, you know, it's funny, I'm in the midst of putting up some different websites for different shows right now. You can go to SeanGrennan.net, and you can find, you know, if you're a glutton for punishment, you can look at pictures of me, and you can find out what I'm doing. There's the show itself, Another Night Before Christmas. You can go to AnotherNightBeforeChristmas.com, and you can see pictures. You know, interestingly, Don Forsten, who's doing the show at Theater at the Center, originated the role in Kansas City when we first opened the show.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because he was an old friend of mine from Chicago, and I knew this was perfect, and I kind of wrote it with him in mind, and we managed to get him the job down there, and he was great down there. He was wonderful. So it was just lucky to get him, and I'm so glad that he always wanted to do it back in Chicago, so this is great that it's worked out.
It's a great big world, but a very small loop.
It is. Exactly.
Well, always a pleasure, my pal. I thank you for taking a little time, and certainly continued success, and let's keep in touch.
Thank you. I would love that. Hey, thank you so much for the interview today.
And a happy holiday. Thank you, Sean.
You too. Bye-bye.
Sean Grennan, of course, the writer of Another Night Before Christmas, and certainly another wonderful way to spend the holidays. We had a lot of great and interesting guests on the show today, a lot of Christmas theater, which we love to talk about. Well, that about does it for our show today. I thank you for sharing this last hour with me and hope you, our listeners, have enjoyed this time as much as I have. Especially like to thank Sean Grennan, who the lyrics and wrote Another Night Before Christmas at Theater at the Center, 1040 Ridge Road in Munster, through December 18th. For information, 219-836-3255. Scott Waldman, another talented writer who abridged the Charles Dickens classic A Christmas Carol at the Metropolis Performing Arts Center, 111 West Campbell in downtown Arlington Heights, through December 24th. For information, 847-577-2121. And finally, Marty Higginbotham, It's a Wonderful Life, performed by the American Blues Theater at the Victory Gardens Richard Christensen Theater, 2433 North Lincoln, through December 31st. For information, 773-871-3000. It's a Wonderful Life, Another Night Before Christmas, and A Christmas Carol. That was fun. Finally, a famous writer once said, one ought every day at least to hear a little song, read a good poem, see a fine picture, and if it were possible, to speak a few reasonable words. I hope on our show today we have, at the very least, done just that, spoken a few reasonable words. At that, I'd like to wish everyone a good week. And as that British group once said, and in the end, the love that you take is equal to the love that you make. Have a great day.
And if we know we're always changing, why should it be the same? And tell me how, year after year, you're sure your heart will fall apart. It's time you hear her name. I know the way I feel for you. It's now or never. The more I love, the more that I'm afraid. In your eyes I may not see forever. Forever.
the best of friends. If we can try with every day to make it better as it grows, any luck then I suppose. The music, the music.